Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Listen attentively. Truth is perfect and complete in itself. It is not something newly discovered. It has always existed. Truth is not far away. It is ever present. It is not something to be attained, since not one of your steps leads away from it. Do not just follow the ideas of others, but learn to listen to the voice within yourself. Your body and mind will become clear, and you will realize the unity of all things. Good evening again. Welcome again, everyone. These opening lines are from our great Zen ancestor, Eihei Dogen Zenji, from his essay, The Fukan Zazengi. So a few weeks ago, during one of our Thursday evening Dharma discussions, I shared a koan that evening for discussion with the group. It's a very beautiful koan. It's one of my favorite koans, and it is case number 81 from Zen Master Dogen's 300 koan, Shobogenzo Shinji. And this koan is titled Yunmen's Everyone's Light. I just want to share a few words from that koan. The main case opens with these lines. Yunmen said to the assembly, "All people are in the midst of illumination. When you look at it, you don't see it. Everything seems dark and dim. How is it being in the midst of illumination?" And the commentary opens with this line. "The pure light encompasses the whole universe, existing right here, now. Why is it? Why is it then that you cannot see it?" And so this evening, I want to talk just a little bit about a topic that's actually quite difficult to talk about. And it's difficult to talk about this topic because really words cannot fully capture or cannot fully express this topic. It's difficult to convey this topic, what this koan, Yunmen's Everyone's Light, touches upon, which is our Buddha nature. This is something that we hear about quite a bit in Zen practice, in Mahayana Buddhist practice. Buddha nature. What is this Buddha nature? And it's known by many names. It's known as our true nature, our true self, ultimate reality, ultimate truth, original mind, original purity, luminous mind, enlightened mind or enlightened essence, Tathagata Garbha or Tathagata Garbha, either pronunciation is fine, and we'll touch on Tathagata Garbha. Also Dharmakaya, primordial consciousness, Dharma Dhatu or suchness, the Tao, Mahamudra, or even emptiness or Shunyata. All of these words, all of these phrases or terms can be used to convey this thing that we call Buddha nature. Many different terms, many different words, but all pointing to essentially the same reality, the same truth. And we should know that Buddha nature, this concept, this idea of Buddha nature, is primarily a Mahayana concept, a Mahayana idea or teaching. It is a central or fundamental teaching in all of the Mahayana Buddhist traditions, which includes our tradition of Zen and all of its counterparts. It's Korean Son, Chinese Chan, Vietnamese Tien. And it's also a central teaching in all of the Tibetan Buddhist teachings and practices, all of the Vajrayana teachings and practices. There aren't, however, many references to Buddha nature in the earlier Hinayana or Theravadin writings and teachings, but there are some when we pay attention. The early Theravadin teachings make reference in numerous writings to the enlightened mind or the luminous mind, what the Buddha described as the mind that is free of delusions or defilements. And the earlier teachings, the earlier Theravadin teachings, viewed enlightened mind or luminous mind, what the Mahayana would later call Buddha nature, essentially as a potentiality, that we all have, that perhaps we do not already have enlightened or luminous mind, but rather we all have the potential to cultivate it through practice and to achieve Buddhahood. But in the Mahayana view, Buddha nature pervades the entire universe and encompasses all things from beginningless time. It was what Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, realized upon his enlightenment. And I want to share a description, if you will, from the Mahayana tradition of what this Buddha nature is. All sentient beings, without exception, have Buddha nature, the inherent purity and perfection of the mind, untouched by changing mental states. Thus, there is neither any reason for conceit nor self-contempt. This mind is obscured by veils that are removable and do not touch the inherent purity and perfection of the nature of the mind. Mahayana Buddhists understand this dimension of our mind to be an innate, ever-present, and inexhaustible source of joy, compassion, courage, and wisdom. It is always operative and always available. And so in Zen practice, we begin with the teaching that each and every one of us, without exception, is already Buddha, that we are all endowed with this innate Buddha nature, this innate luminous mind. It is our true nature from the beginning, but we are just unable to see it. We are unable to recognize it. And so in many ways, the Zen pillar of great faith, one of our three pillars of Zen, great faith, is thus very important in our practice, and especially in the earlier stages of our practice, because it is a faith that invites us to see and to experience for ourselves through continuous practice this Buddha nature, this luminous mind that we all innately have. And so there are many stories, many parables that kind of illustrate Buddha nature, this concept, this idea of Buddha nature. And one such story, and this is a true story and one that perhaps some of you have heard in the past, is that of the Golden Buddha in Thailand, the Golden Buddha that is found at Wat Chai Mit in Thailand. This is a Buddha statue that stands nearly 10 feet tall, and it is believed that it was built around 1403. This Buddha statue, in the 1700s, in the early 1700s, it's believed that this Buddha statue, which was made of pure gold, was completely covered over. It was covered in a layer of stucco. It was painted, and it was decorated with inlaid glass. So it was completely covered and made into this new form, seemingly. And this was done because of Burmese invaders. They feared that Burmese invaders would either steal or destroy the Buddha statue. So they completely, essentially concealed it in this stucco painting and inlaid glass. And it remained this way for over two centuries, completely forgotten what its original nature, if you will, is. In 1955, it was discovered or uncovered when the Buddha statue was being moved. It was going to be placed in a new temple that was going to house this Buddha, and it was accidentally dropped. Some of the straps gave way, it accidentally dropped, and a piece cracked off of it. And of course, lo and behold, someone noticed that it was shimmering, the color of gold. And so they began to uncover the Golden Buddha statue and discovered that this nearly 10-foot tall statue was made of pure gold. This was its essential nature. Underneath the covering. This Buddha statue, by the way, is estimated to be worth more than $250 million today. And so this story of the Golden Buddha in Thailand is really a metaphor for our own Buddha nature, which is quite like this, covered over by our conditioning and by our delusions of mind, so that we cannot see it or remember who we truly are, our true nature. And in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, it contains one of the earliest references in the Mahayana Sutras or the Mahayana scriptures of this Buddha nature. And the Mahayana, the Mahaparinirvana Sutra in chapter 12 begins with the following. Kashyapa said to the Buddha, O world-honored one, is there self in the 25 existences or not? The Buddha said, O good man, self means Tathagatagarbha, which is translated often as Buddha womb, Buddha embryo, or Buddha seed. In other words, Buddha nature. The Buddha said, every being has Buddha nature. This is the self. And such self has, from the very beginning, been under cover of innumerable delusions and defilements. That is why man cannot see it. And so the sutra points to this early teaching of Buddha nature in the Mahayana tradition. But Buddha nature ultimately is something that really cannot be expressed or understood simply in words, in concepts, in sutras. It must be directly realized by each and every one of us. We must realize it for ourselves, because it's impossible to really fully capture the non-conceptual essence of this awakened awareness, this realization, or this luminous mind. We cannot capture it in simple words. And yet, of course, as human beings, we rely on words. We use words to express everything, to understand everything, to make sense of things. It's one of our primary forms of communication and understanding. And so for thousands of years, we have, of course, used words to express and to point the way to that which is ultimately inexpressible, but which can be experienced. But we should always remember that words, concepts, and ideas, while both helpful and necessary in pointing the way to truth, are never ultimate truth itself. Words and concepts are simply pointers or guides. They are needed guides, but they are simply guides helping us to walk the path towards ultimate truth, which is not to be found outside of ourselves. No one can give you ultimate truth. No one can give you Buddha nature, because you already have it. And so some of you have heard me talk before about my spiritual background. I was raised when younger in the Christian tradition, in the Catholic tradition. And many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the Christian doctrine of original sin. This idea, this teaching that we are all born with impurity, original sin. We are all born impure. This was a doctrine that, of course, I learned when I was young in the Catholic tradition. And it was a teaching or a doctrine that simply did not resonate with me. As I grew older, as I began to mature a bit more, this doctrine of original sin made absolutely no sense to me. Now, it may make sense to some. Some may understand it, may have a different understanding. But this was a teaching that made absolutely no sense to me and simply did not resonate with me. But as I began to learn the Buddha's teachings and to embrace the Dharma, to embrace the teachings of the Buddha, I, of course, began to learn about Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is quite the opposite. It's being born with original purity and original goodness. And as I learned to embrace this teaching, this truly resonated with me. This made far more sense, that we are all born with original purity, original goodness, as opposed to being born with original impurity or original sin. And so I come back to our opening koan, Yunmen's, Everyone's Light. It says that we are all in the midst of this pure light, which is our original innate and inherent purity. And after discussing this koan with the group several weeks ago on that Thursday night, a question arose. A dear Dharma friend and a member of this community sent me a question, a very good question, and one that has arisen for centuries around this teaching of Buddha nature. And that question basically is, if we all have or are endowed with innate Buddha nature, then why practice? Why the need for practice at all if we are already Buddhas or we already have innate Buddha nature? And this is a very important question, a very good question. In fact, it was the very question that drove our ancestor Eihei Dogen Zenji, the founder of our Soto Zen tradition. It drove him in his practice and in his search for truth and for realization. So how do we answer this question? Why practice at all? Well, I'll quote a teacher that I very much respect quite a bit, Zenju Erflin Manuel, and I will say that I don't have answers, but I have responses. And so, not surprisingly, there has been, over the centuries, over more than 1,000 years, there has been much debate, much difference of opinion or description of the view of Buddha nature or ultimate reality. Many different opinions, many different descriptions of it. And in that sense, I would suggest that there really is no one true and correct way to see it or to understand it. It really depends on tradition and interpretation. Our teacher used to often say it's just a matter of semantics, this matter of interpretation, of how we interpret words, phrases, ideas, concepts. But Dogen Zenji, in his masterwork, The Shobogenzo, wrote an essay, a fascicle, in the Shobogenzo titled Busho. And Busho essentially translates to On Buddha Nature. It is regarded as probably one of the 3 or 4 most important essays in the Shobogenzo, and it's actually the longest essay in the Shobogenzo, usually clocking in at over 30 pages or so. But in this essay, and I want to share just a small piece of this essay, as it is very long, but Dogen, in his typical way, Dogen was a brilliant thinker, a brilliant philosopher, and had his own unique way of interpreting teachings, of interpreting words. I think he was very much a student of semantics. But in Busho, in this essay, Dogen says the following. Shakyamuni Buddha said in a verse, all sentient beings have Buddha nature through and through, and the Tathagata continually dwells therein, ever constant. This is the lion's roar of our great master, the venerable Shakyamuni. And what would be the principle underlying the world-honored one's words, all sentient beings have Buddha nature through and through? It is that which manifests just so. The phrase having it through and through, moreover, does not mean that one began having it at some moment, or that one had it to start with, or that one has it as some strange and mysterious thing, much less that one has it conditionally or arbitrarily. Buddha nature is not the existence of something that one possesses at the start, for it pervades both our past and our present. It is not the existence of something that has arisen for the first time, for it does not partake of a single bit of illusory dust. It is not the existence of some particular being, for it encompasses all beings. It is not the existence of something that is beyond having a beginning, for it is something that makes its appearance just in the way that it does. It is not the existence of something that has just come into being for the first time, for our ordinary, ever-present mind is synonymous with the way, the Tao. Above all, you need to know that within this having it through and through, sentient beings do not readily find an easy or pleasant way to encounter it. When you understand having it through and through in this manner, to have it through and through then means to penetrate its very substance and to let all our notions and opinions about it drop off. My fellow brother and sister monks, and perhaps a few others, will appreciate that sometimes our teacher, after a reading like this, one of Dogen's readings, he would look up and he would say, did you all get that? This is the way we often see Dogen's writings. But Dogen, in this essay, in Busho, he once again, his way of interpreting things, or of reinterpreting things, was quite brilliant. And he had his own unique way, often looking beyond the mere surface of words. So in looking at the words of the Buddha in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, he kind of reinterpreted it. And in his typical way, Dogen seems to interpret the Buddha's teaching to mean that Buddha nature is not simply something that we have or that we possess, this thing that we have within us, that we possess within us, but rather it is what we are through and through. Our entire being, therefore, is Buddha nature. We are Buddha nature. And Buddha nature, or the enlightened mind, Dogen points to, is not a matter of attaining anything, nor is it just a matter of knowing conceptually that we have Buddha nature or that we are Buddha nature. Dogen says it is a matter of realization, and that realization only unfolds through our moment-to-moment practice. For Dogen, Buddha nature is not something that is so extraordinary, so out of this world, that it is almost unattainable for most. Dogen does not see it this way. Dogen saw it that each and every one of us can fully realize our Buddha nature. It is in our everyday experience and in our everyday practice that we realize Buddha nature. And so this is what Zen Master Dogen referred to in his teachings over and over again as practice realization. He saw them as not being two, but being one and the same, practice realization. That Buddhahood is not something achieved or attained, but rather it is something that is realized directly through our daily practice, through our daily experience. And so it is through our wholehearted moment-to-moment practice where we kind of first begin to have small glimpses of this true nature of ours, small glimpses of ultimate reality of our true nature. And those glimpses begin to give rise to the mind of awakening. The 11th century Korean Zen master Chinul said the following. He said, although we have awakened to original nature, beginningless habit energies are extremely difficult to remove suddenly. Hindrances are formidable, and habits are deeply ingrained. So how could you neglect gradual cultivation simply because of one moment of awakening? After awakening or insight, you must be constantly on your guard. If deluded thoughts suddenly appear, do not follow after them. Then and only then will your practice or realization reach completion. And Chinul was speaking about these sudden moments of awakening, these glimpses that perhaps some of us have experienced or can experience through practice. We can experience these glimpses of our true nature, these glimpses of who we truly are, beyond all of the dualities, beyond all of the labels, that we can experience these glimpses, these sudden moments of awakening through practice, but that we must have gradual cultivation. And so it's through continuous practice of the way, doing the work, the skillful effort through practice, that realization is cultivated gradually. So we have these kind of two different views of Buddha nature or of Buddhahood. There's the earlier Hinayana or Theravadin view that we don't have luminous mind to begin with, but that it is a potential within all of us that we can cultivate through practice. And then there's the Mahayana view that we already are this Buddha nature. We already possess this luminous, enlightened mind, but we must realize it through practice. And the contemporary Theravadin teacher, Joseph Goldstein, he really makes a wonderful point. He points out that these two different views do not need to be competing views. They do not need to be seen as absolute metaphysical truths. Because when we do this, we of course make one view right and another view must automatically be wrong. It must be incorrect when we see them as having to be absolute truths. But he says rather, each view can be seen as skillful means for letting go of our clinging to views and letting go of our delusions, with each view pointing to ultimate reality or ultimate truth. And he also points out that there can be a danger here. There can be a danger of taking this overly simplistic view, particularly from the Mahayana point of view, that if we all have enlightened mind, if we all have Buddha nature, and we simply need to realize it, well, there it is. It's just that simple, right? We just need to realize that we have it. But of course, Joseph Goldstein points out, just as Zen Master Dogen did, just as Chenol did, that we must be careful not to downplay the dedicated effort, the continuous practice that is required to transform our delusions and to realize our true nature. It's not a simple matter of conceptually saying to ourselves, we already have it, I just need to realize it, plain and simple. Our conditioning runs deep. Delusions can be absolutely endless. And our habit energies, as Chenol points out, are formidable. So thus our luminous mind, our Buddha nature, can easily become clouded, even when we have had glimpses of it, these moments of awakening or insight. And the Zen ancestor Huineng in the Platform Sutra says, everyone's nature is fundamentally pure and everything is present in this nature of yours. If you think about something bad, you will do something bad. If you think about something good, you will do something good. Realize that everything is present in this nature of yours. But your nature itself remains pure. The sun and moon are always shining. It is only when they are blocked by clouds that the light is above and darkness below, and you can't see them. Then suddenly a welcome wind comes and blows the clouds away, and all the countless images of the world suddenly appear. Your nature is pure like the clear sky, and your wisdom is like the sun or the moon. It is always shining. It is because you become attached to external objects or views, and the clouds of delusion cover your nature that you can't see. And so perhaps this is the most appropriate answer to that question that was posed. If we are endowed with innate Buddha nature, with this luminous, enlightened mind, then why practice? Why the need for practice? Our karma, our karmic seeds, our choices and the consequences of those choices, our delusions, they can be changed. They can be changed. They can be purified. And those veils that cloud our clear seeing can be blown away or removed, as Huineng points to. We can move from delusion and confusion, which is samsara, to awakening and clarity, which is nirvana. Our continuous practice, this continuous practice of the way, is what clears away those clouds of delusion so that we can realize our original purity, our original goodness. And we work in our practice with everything that results from the mind, because absolutely everything does result from the mind, from our consciousness. And so we must always be attentive, as Chenol points to those formidable, repetitive habit energies of mind. Clouds can disperse, but they can come floating back, often without our even realizing it. Our mind, our consciousness can be clouded again, even after we have had glimpses of ultimate reality. And so the absolute nature of mind is like this. It is like the sky. It is vast, it is pure, and it is empty of any fixed or inherent delusions, defilements, or obstructions. But the relative nature of the mind, or consciousness, is to produce thoughts, to always produce thoughts, and to impute labels and judgments and qualities on everything that comes through the mind, thus creating delusions, defilements, and obstructions. And so a word on Tathagata Garbha and Shunyata, or emptiness. We refer to Tathagata Garbha, which is another way of expressing this innate, pure Buddha nature. And Tathagata Garbha is often translated again as the womb of the Buddha, or the seed of the Buddha. And from the Mahayana point of view, Tathagata Garbha really expresses that each one of us is, not has, but each one of us is a womb or seed of Buddhahood, from which the enlightened mind arises, when we skillfully cultivate that seed or that womb, and we do so through practice. And shunyata, this word shunyata, which often is translated as emptiness, this is also seen as the emptiness that constitutes ultimate reality, the very emptiness that constitutes this Buddha nature, this original, pure, luminous mind, which is empty of any fixed or abiding self-essence, and thus from which all phenomena can arise. And it's important to note that from this emptiness, all phenomena, including our awakened awareness and our delusions and defilements of mind, can arise. And I think when we had our discussion, Sunil pointed to this. He made this comparison between shunyata, or emptiness, and he said it was like Buddha nature, that they were very much alike. And this is a correct view. Shunyata can also be seen as our true self, our original, unobscured, pure mind, which is always unfolding and which is realized through practice. And so once again, we come back to Dogen's teaching of practice realization. For Dogen, they are one and the same thing. But most importantly, he points to the fact that true realization only arises from continuous practice of the way in each and every moment of our life. In each and every moment of our daily life, which is our practice. Our daily life is our practice. And it is through that practice that this realization of our true nature, of Tathagata Garbha, of Buddha nature, arises from that practice. And so I want to share one last piece. This is from contemporary Chan teacher Guagu. And he says, in the face of all the difficulties that we experience, each one of us tries to live the best way we can, responding to whatever conditions we find ourselves in. Those who are suffering and harming others are simply giving form to the workings of Buddha nature in delusion. When we're awakened, Buddha nature expresses itself as wisdom. When we're deluded, it appears as ignorance. We must awaken to who we are in order to embody the truth of our Buddha nature and amid the complexities of life. We can't recognize Buddha nature because we are so steeped in our created world of dualities. We perpetuate notions of good and evil, gaining and losing, success and failure, victim and perpetrator, all of which revolve around the central vantage point of me, I, and mine. It is precisely due to this self-referential polarization that we suffer, and we inflict the same suffering on others. We can free ourselves from this cycle by not confusing emotional afflictions with our true nature. When we free ourselves in this way, we allow the Buddha nature of those around us to also manifest. Through our understanding, we can engage with all beings in such a way as to help them bring out their own wisdom and compassion. But to do all this, we must engage in practice. And so again, as Joseph Goldstein points to, whether we approach Buddha nature, our understanding of Buddha nature, from the earlier view that the enlightened mind or Buddha nature is something that we all have the potential to achieve through practice, or from the Mahayana view that enlightened mind or Buddha nature is what we already are, we simply must realize it through practice. Both views can be seen as skillful means that require the same element of continuous practice of the way. And so the answer to that old question, how do we get to Carnegie Hall, is the same as how we realize our Buddha nature. Practice, practice, practice is the way.